This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith about fair trade, particularly fair trade coffee, with our guest, Reverend Cindy Shepherd, recently back from a trip to Nicaragua. Cindy, why should people drink fair trade coffee?
Because it tastes great. And also because when you drink fair trade coffee, you can be sure that you're supporting a product and a process where people all along the chain of production have been paid fairly, and which is supports sustainable agriculture and often organic farming, and which is good for the earth as well. So it's good from top to bottom.
Now, how did you first get interested in the whole issue of fair trade products?
Well, I just love coffee. That was probably my entrance point. And I noticed on the Presbyterian website that they had a coffee project. So I started looking at that. And it is a fair trade process. They have an interfaith partner who's called Equal Exchange, which does the makes the contracts and works with the people in the coffee-producing areas, and then packages it, roasts it, and packages it, and sends it out to various churches and religious organizations as a partnership to kind of link the consumers in the United States with producers all over the country, all over the world, really, and in a way that's fair to all of them.
You are a Protestant Christian pastor, but you said this was an interfaith partnership. What does that mean?
It means that not only are there, I think there are 10 denominations that are in partnership with Equal Exchange, but also the American Jewish World Service and the Islamic World Service are the latest interfaith partners with Equal Exchange, so that groups in mosques and synagogues also can sell this coffee and the chocolate and tea, and there are several products, not just coffee. We're good to tea drinkers too.
Tell me about the chocolate.
Ooh, it's so good. Steve, I brought you some coffee from Nicaragua.
My wife will appreciate that.
But I didn't. I should have paid attention. I didn't know that you don't drink coffee.
I used to drink a lot of it and enjoyed it, but I eventually got to realize I was getting headaches when I couldn't get the coffee at 10 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon, and so I decided my body must be too sensitive to it. So I'll occasionally have it, and I do enjoy it, but I've switched to chocolate, and so far I haven't noticed any.
There are no ill effects from chocolate, especially fair trade chocolate. The chocolate industry around the world, often commercial chocolate, it relies on child labor and takes advantage of small producers. The chocolate grows on trees, and it's often grows on people's land that don't have a lot of land, not commercial. And it's also one of the areas where large enterprises can take advantage of small farmers and just dictate the price. And sometimes it's not worth what it costs to produce. So chocolate's interesting. We didn't visit any chocolate farms while we were there. But I know there are some in Nicaragua.
Now tell us who all went on this trip to Nicaragua who were concerned about fair trade.
It was a great delegation. We had a wonderful time together. There were 15 of us, and the Presbyterian Hunger Project and Equal Exchange were the sponsors of the trip. So most of us were Presbyterian. About half, I guess, were pastors or college chaplains. And then the other half were people who had been interested in fair trade, or one was said, I'm just here because I'm a coffee snob, and this is great coffee. Cool. But it was an interesting group. One of the women was works in Voice of America in Washington, D.C., and is a writer on their news desk there for the domestic news desk. So I got to meet a lot of interesting people.
How much did it cost?
The trip cost $525.
Wow.
Plus airfare.
How long?
We were there a week. We were there a wonderful week. And
what week was that?
Oh, it was January the 16th through the 23rd.
Ooh, a good time to leave central Illinois.
It was a very pleasant time to be in Nicaragua. It's the middle of their summer there, and it's also the end of the coffee harvest. Coffee harvest in Nicaragua lasts about 3 months, from the end of October till the end of January. And during that time, the children are out of school, kind of like kids used to get out of school here to help with the harvest. They're out of school in Nicaragua to help with the coffee harvest. So we got to see a lot of the kids, too.
Now, you'd mentioned that coffee, chocolate, tea often can involve child labor that's exploitative. Did you see any evidence of that?
No, because we didn't look at the plantation coffee. We were visiting the coffee producers that work with Equal Exchange, and so we were with small-scale producers and small co-ops. We did see kids, families working together, and the children that we saw in the homes where we stayed, I was impressed with how diligent they were and what hard workers they are, and in terms of just contributing to the family well-being and being involved with what their parents are doing and what's going on around them. They were really great kids.
But you thought that the way those kids were involved was appropriate, and they were safe.
Yes, they are encouraged to go to school. They do go to school. In fact, the village where we were has built two school buildings, and they have are able to support two profesoras that teach the kids. And a part of that, they told us, was that they had a secure source of income through fair trade products, because they knew that they were going to get a fair price for their product. And a fair trade pays a premium called a social premium, so that money doesn't all go to the individual farmers. It goes to the farmers, and part of it goes to the co-op. So the village was actually seemed very... We would certainly never call it rich, living the way we live, but they seemed very like they had what they needed, and the kids got to go to school, and I don't think it was exploitive in any way, but they certainly know how to sort coffee beans and how to make tortillas, and they're busy kids. They don't have TV. They don't have video games. They don't have a lot of toys to play with, but they're busy.
Now, where did you stay the week you were in Nicaragua?
Several different places. We started out in Managua, and we stayed in a guest house that's belongs to the Protestant, a coalition of Protestant churches that grew out of the response to a hurricane in 1972. And so we stayed in a guest house there, which was really nice. It had some running water. None of it was warm, but it was water. And but the heart of our trip was our visit up to the mountains. And we went up where the coffee producers live, and we stayed with farm families when we were up there. And that was the most enlightening part of the trip for me, and very, very enjoyable. Then we also, when we left there, we spent a night in a hostel in a smaller city, and we went back to Managua.
When you stayed with the farm family, the family that was doing the growing of the coffee beans and so forth, what was family life like there that you observed?
Well, it was lovely. These people lived on the top of a mountain and in a beautiful home. It was so different than any place that I have seen as an American that at first I was shocked by where they lived, because they didn't have any furniture, for one thing, in their house. They had this nice house, but the room where we walked in had one table in it, and it was kind of shoved up against the wall, and that's where we put our backpacks. And the kitchen was a dirt floor, had a dirt floor kitchen, and they had like stackable plastic chairs, five of them, and that's what we sat on the whole time we were there. But the family was, I think we would recognize most anywhere. That Luis and Elsa were in their 30s, and they have two children. Anya was 11, and Ricardo was 5. And they also had, living with them there, a hired man and who lives with them all the time, and who was kind of an interesting case for us, because he was the only person that we encountered that didn't understand that we didn't understand Spanish.
Okay. He would talk to you in Spanish and expect you to understand.
He just went on and on and on. And no matter how often we said, no hablo español, he kept talking and kind of wanting to show us things and talk to us about things. And what someone told us later of people that stayed with another family told us that their family said, you know, he's not right. And he doesn't have a family of his own. He doesn't hasn't married or has children, but Elsa and Luis take care of him and feed him, and he works for them. And so he was clearly part of their family, although not related
not a relative.
To them.
Uh-huh. Now, you described the house as having just minimal furniture. Where did you sleep?
Now, they did have beds.
Ah, there were beds. Okay.
They have platform beds and
mattresses?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not very big mattresses. It was
thin
mattresses.
Okay.
But
coverings, or how warm was it? Maybe you didn't want to be covered.
It wasn't. We brought our sleeping bags so that we wouldn't make them use linens or anything. So we had our sleeping bags, but it was too hot to be in your sleeping bag. Okay. It was really warm.
Now, what were the houses themselves made of? Walls, ceiling, roof?
This was very substantial, and it was, I think, adobe.
Uh-huh.
It had thick walls, and the windows didn't have any screens and didn't have any glass. It was just an opening in the wall that had and on a hinge, and so you pulled out a piece of the wall and swung it around and looked out the window.
Bugs?
There were some mosquitoes. But I don't think there were very many bugs in the house. I didn't see any bugs in the house except some spiders.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's because the chickens came in the house, and I'm sure they ate the bugs.
All right. We're talking with Cindy Shepherd about a recent trip she took with an interfaith group called Equal Exchange to Nicaragua, talking about fair trade products. If you'd like to join this conversation, this is a live program every Sunday night here on WILL 580. And if you're in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, you can punch in 333-9455 and talk with our guest. If you're listening and it's a long-distance call, perhaps you're on the Internet, perhaps you're listening as far away as Chicago, Indianapolis by broadcast, but use our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Cindy, how are these fair trade arrangements set up, and who kind of oversees to make sure that the money is, people pay extra money when they buy these fair trade products? Who makes sure that that money gets to the right people in the right places?
Well, Equal Exchange is the manager there, and that it is a co-op as well. It's a worker-owned co-op, and that's based in West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. I think that's close to Boston, but to be honest, I haven't looked it up. Two of the people that came on the trip with us were worked at Equal Exchange in the Interfaith Relations Department, and they have buyers that visit these places and find the co-ops and set up relationships with them. fair trade is different than other ways to buy coffee in that a fair trade buyer doesn't just pay all at once and doesn't pay just what the market, the lowest market price, but negotiates before the start of the season.
Before the growing season.
Before the growing season. Negotiates what the price is going to be and pays, has to pay a minimum. And Equal Exchange pays that minimum plus.
Up front, before the seed is even bought.
They pay half of it up front.
Okay.
And then they pay half of it partway through the season. And they work, the people that we were with knew the president of and the officers from the co-op that we visited in Buaco. That's called a secondary co-op because several of the farmer co-ops then have joined together in this secondary co-op where the beans are processed in a dry mill process. And they do a lot of quality control there. It handles not only coffee, but that particular co-op also has two primary co-ops that deal with honey. And so they have a honey processing facility in Buaco as well.
I want to get more detail about each of those, but let's give people a flavor who are listening of what it was like in Nicaragua in terms of the music. Tell us a little bit about one of these selections you've brought back with you of Nicaraguan music.
The first one is just a really pretty instrumental that kind of lets you hear a little Latin flavor, and it's just sweet. I think my Spanish is not great, but I think that the title means hair the color of corn.
All right, let's listen to some Nicaraguan instrumental music. So that's a instrumental music from Nicaragua. I heard some things that I might call flutes, a guitar, of course, some strings, maybe an accordion-type instrument.
I think so.
Is that typical of the kind of Nicaraguan music you heard there? Did you hear any live music while you were there? I should ask that first, I guess.
I didn't hear any live music while I was
Not
there.
Not live, okay.
And I had to go out on the street and find some folk music. They had a big party up at the co-op in the mountains, and it was amazing. They didn't have electricity, but they brought in a generator to run this huge DJ station, and they played like disco and rock and roll and really loud music. Us old people went outside because
it was so loud.
I thought that was really pretty because it kind of sounds like there are birds singing, and there were birds singing everywhere. It was incredible. And that piece also sounds to me like maybe they're riding on horseback, and there were horses and mules everywhere.
And that's how people move the product around, the coffee beans, okay. What were the roads like?
Oh, well, we traveled by bus, by a little minibus. And when we left Managua, the roads were like roads here. It was like a two-lane road. And as we got farther and farther away from Managua, the road got more and more adventurous. And we headed up into the mountains, and pretty soon it was just sort of terrifying. It was a dirt road, some gravel, and narrowed to one lane a lot of places.
And you're on the edge of a mountain?
And you're going up and down and around mountain passes, so it was exciting.
And difficult to get product from there to market, of course.
Oh, I think so, yes. They do have, obviously, we were in a motorized vehicle, and they do use trucks when they take the product from those mountainous villages down to Buaco, the larger town where the dry mill is. But we passed on the road once, we passed a truck that was just stuffed with workers. And it was coming from a coffee plantation, one of the commercial plantations where they grow coffee with chemicals and in a field. They clear cut the field and just plant coffee. That's not how the growers farther up the mountains work.
Now, the growers in the co-op where you were, tell us what the mountains can look so many different ways. Was this heavy vegetation that had to be cleared for any spaces where they could grow crops?
It wasn't cleared. In fact, I have a picture of what looks like just sort of undergrowth with some corn stalks sticking up out of the top of it. They even grew corn on the side of the mountain, just kind of stuck down in the midst of everything else. And the coffee, part of what makes the coffee so good is that it's shade-grown coffee. So it's grown in amongst other trees on the side of the mountain. So there were lemon trees and orange trees and banana trees and then trees I didn't know what they were. But I could recognize the fruit trees. And when we went out to pick coffee one morning, they were just showing us how it was done. We weren't really helping, of course. They were just giving us a little taste of what it was like to do that. The coffee plants are probably 5 feet high on the side of the mountain. So they grow kind of under the canopy of the other trees. And so the berries ripen very slowly, and that makes them really good.
Cindy, we have a caller on line number one, someone from Mahomet. You're on the air with our guest, Cindy Shepherd. Go ahead, please. Yes, line number one. You are on the air.
I was calling to ask if you could say a few words about the process that the coffee goes through from the time that it's picked from the little plants until it actually ends up in a warehouse ready for sale in this country. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the call.
We were lucky to get to see a lot of that process. It's picked on the side of the mountain, which was really hard work. I was impressed at the people who go out and pick every day. It's picked in the form of a cherry, and it's about the size of a cherry. It's a beautiful red color, and you only want to pick, they told us, only pick the red ones. If you leave the green ones, then they'll ripen, and we'll go back and pick them later. So they're picked, and then each farmer has on his place, what a wet mill or a beneficio, they call it. And it has a machine that depulps the fruit so that the cherry fruity part is taken off. And the coffee bean is a double seed inside each cherry. And that comes out the other side. It's all, and then it's dried partially on the farm. put in long trays that are out in the yard, and so that it dries for a while and it's sorted there. The families sort the best beans, and any beans that have problems or holes in them or insect damage are put in a different pile. They're not used for sale. And then they're sacked up after they've dried a while and taken down to Boaco, this town where the dry mill is. And there they're dried further out on huge patios. And there it's dried down just like we dry corn here to about 12% moisture. It's dried down to 12% moisture there, and then put in bags in a warehouse and left there for a month to stabilize, because they don't want any unevenness in the moisture content, because fungus could form. At that point, the coffee is just a little light green bean. It looks like a coffee bean, but it's light green, and it doesn't really smell like coffee, and it doesn't taste like anything if you stick it in your mouth. Uh-huh. At that point, then they do a lot of quality control in Boaco now. They've trained people to do what they call cupping. So they taste it for flavors and quality and get it all sorted out. And then it's from Boaco, it's shipped to the docks where it goes to Massachusetts, to West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. And there it's roasted and blended. And there are several different blends that are available through Equal Exchange. And then from there, it's shipped out to the final consumers like me.
Now, where do you buy your Equal Exchange fair trade coffee?
They have a website.
What is it?
EqualExchange.com, I think.
Okay.
The Presbyterian, I buy mine through the Presbyterian Coffee Project, which I found on the PCUSA.org website.
Okay.
And if you put Coffee Project in the search engine there, it'll take you there and tell you how to order. If you order it off like that, you have to order in bulk.
How much?
A case is 6 packages.
It costs about how much?
It varies a little bit among the different kinds of coffee, but about $32 to $36, $38 a case.
And that'll last. A case will last you what, a week?
I've never really paid much attention. I order it and resell it at the church at cost, and so. I don't know. I just take it over there, and when I need some more, I go get some.
And you're pastor of what church?
Philo Presbyterian Church in Philo, Illinois.
The center of the universe.
Absolutely.
It says so right on the water tower. We're talking with Cindy Shepherd, who is the pastor at, you just heard, of Philo Presbyterian Church, and she's recently come back from an interfaith trip to Nicaragua, looking at fair trade coffee as a mission. We'll be talking more about what it means for this to be a mission after our little break. We're about halfway through our program here. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, although Don Nolan will be our guest host next week, as I'm going to be unable to be in the studio. Every Sunday night for the last 11 years or so, between 5 and 6 p.m., we've been talking with people about issues of religion and spirituality and ethics and values. And today, as you hear, we're talking about how to buy coffee that helps the people who are producing it, and they're being treated fairly. So we'll be getting back to Cindy Shepherd in just a moment. Let me mention that next week, our guest here on Keeping the Faith, Don Nolan, will be talking with will be people from the Avicenna Health Center. That's a new health center set up by the Muslim community in the Champaign-Urbana area. It's a health clinic for people who don't have health insurance, who need help with their medical needs and can't afford to pay for it themselves in most cases. Well, the medical director, Dr. Shamim Sadia, will be here, as well as the chair of the board of directors of this new health clinic, Professor Irfan Ahmad, a professor of engineering from the University of Illinois. That's next week here, March 21st, on Keeping the Faith. On March 28th, I'll be back here in the studio with our guest by phone, Chris Valillo. We'll be talking about the music of the time of Abraham Lincoln, and specifically things that Lincoln probably sang and certainly knew. Chris Valillo is a musician and a performer and a composer, so we'll be listening to some of his music and talking with him about that project. On Easter Sunday, our guest will be Reverend Heidi Weatherford, and she'll be talking about the Brahms Requiem. Those are some of the programs coming up on Keeping the Faith. Of course, if you miss any of our programs or if you miss part of this one with Cindy Shepherd, you can hear it on the archive at will.illinois.edu. Then click on AM when you're given a choice of AM, FM, or TV, and then you can go to Keeping the Faith. You can put in the search box Cindy Shepherd or Fair Trade Coffee, and if you'd like to hear previous programs, there's a whole list of them there, and you can hear them at your convenience on your computer. If you enjoy hearing Keeping the Faith, you might also enjoy on our sister station, WILL-TV, at 12:30 on Sunday noons, Religion and Ethics News Weekly. Support for Keeping the Faith has been provided for a number of years from the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. Coming up this Tuesday noon at the Y on Know Your University at their noon lecture program on Tuesdays, Professor Winston Solberg, professor of history, will be talking about the past presidents, trustees, and the governance of the university. Professor Solberg is a fascinating lecturer, a longtime favorite of many students over the decades, and he's, of course, writing the official history of the university, and he's going to be talking about this very pertinent topic, presidents, trustees, and governance, this Tuesday at the Y, March 16. That's at noon. The University Y is at the corner of Wright and Chalmers, and you can get there by bus, of course, easily. Just get off at the University Library stop, walk half a block, or there's often parking spaces on Tuesday noons as students have finished their morning classes. So it's a free lecture. You can take your lunch or you can get a good lunch at the Thai eatery there and enjoy that lecture, be able to ask questions to Professor Winston Solberg. There will not be a Friday Forum program this week because students will be taking off for their spring break, but we'll be announcing those future Friday Forum coming up later. Well, let's get back to our talking with Cindy Shepherd. Let me give the phone numbers again if listeners would like to give us a call. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. That's toll free. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, several local lines will get you into our studio, and Kyle Croa, our engineer, will put you in line here to talk with our guest, Cindy Shepherd. That local number is 333-9455. Cindy, let's talk a little bit about why is this an ethical thing to do? Why is this a good choice for people when they buy their coffee?
Well, Steve, for all major religions that I know of, have at the very basis that God wants us to treat one another fairly and wants people to have lives that are good and full of meaning. And the foundational story for the Judeo-Christian tradition is a story of the Exodus, where God rescues a bunch of people who are having to work hard and make somebody else rich, and gives them a opportunity to make lives for themselves and for their families. And so I think that no matter what Glenn Beck says, that social justice lies at the heart of religion and spirituality. So we're in a situation now with globalization and our consumer culture where a lot of times we don't know how to have ethical relationships with the people that produce the goods that we consume. And fair trade is just one way for us to reestablish the links with people that make things that we use and make sure that we are being fair to them and giving them the kind of consideration that we hope people give us.
Cindy, we have several callers waiting to talk with you about this issue. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on the air with Cindy Shepherd. Line number one, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you very much for this program today. I think it's very interesting, and I think it's important, what we eat and how we spend our money. I think it's a very ethical question. But I just wanted to say that equal exchange products are available at the Common Ground Food Co-op, and you can buy like any amount of coffee that you want to buy, and they have tea and chocolate there too. So I just wanted to give that information out.
And that, since people listen to this program from all around this area, the Common Ground Food Co-op is where?
It's at the Lincoln Square.
In Urbana, yes.
In Urbana, yes.
Lincoln Square in Urbana, all right. Uh-huh. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate
Thank you
it.
For calling in. I meant to mention that, and I forgot. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have another caller waiting on line number four. Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I also want to suggest places to get fair trade coffee. The 10,000 Villages in Champaign on Walnut, just a couple buildings up from University, sells it by the pound. And also Harriet's, which is an actual roastery and roast coffee locally on Columbia Street, just a few blocks up in Champaign, they have some fair trade coffee selections. I believe that they pay attention to the conditions of the people and the places that they buy all their coffee, but they have some that is, in fact, certified if you'd like to make particularly sure of that. And that, of course, also is very fresh, since they roast it right away. But all of these are good places to get coffee, and our church also buys fair trade coffee.
What church is yours?
Community United Church at 6th and Daniel in Champaign.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And we have another caller waiting on line number two from Urbana. Yes, go ahead, please.
Hello, thank you for your call. I'm just finishing a cup of fair trade coffee and enjoying it. Could you tell me, is it only from Nicaragua, or are there other places, other nations that are involved in the fair trade program?
There are lots of other places. And Equal Exchange, I know, has an Ethiopian coffee and a Kenyan coffee and a Tanzanian coffee. It's from Africa. And then there are coffees from all over Latin America and Mexico that are very good. And all of them are come from worker-owned co-ops.
And could I ask our caller, where do you get your fair trade coffee?
Well, I get some from a colleague who manages it, and I buy some at some of the other places that have been recently mentioned on the air, too.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
I just add that when you go to a coffee shop, a lot of times a coffee shop will have a fair trade selection, and you can just choose that kind of coffee. Not all of them are fair trade, but most places where I go to have a cup of cappuccino have fair trade coffees on the menu.
Equal Exchange is the group that sponsored the trip that you went on, that you said was an interfaith group where not only 10 Christian denominations, but Jews and Muslims are involved. Are there other groups like that that do similar things?
I don't know.
Don't know. Okay.
But there's a fair trade organization that certifies fair trade. And so even in some grocery stores, you can find coffee that says it's fair trade. And you can be pretty sure that it is, in fact, that they do pay a fair price, and they have to be in this kind of relationship with the producers where they pay them a good price and pay part of it before the harvest and part of it after. So that certification is a good one to look for.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your background, Cindy. Where did you go to college and grow up and seminary, that sort of thing?
I grew up in Kansas, and I graduated from the University of Kansas. I'm probably the only person in central Illinois who was happy that Bill Self went to Kansas because that's my alma mater.
Yes.
Then I went to seminary at Princeton Seminary in New Jersey, and then out into the world. I have always lived in the Midwest since then, though. I'm a Midwesterner. It's my home.
And tell us about your church. What is Philo Presbyterian Church like?
Philo Presbyterian is a lovely, lovely congregation. Its origins are in a farm town and agricultural community. But now, as Philo has changed over the last 50 years, and the church has too, so that we have people who are who live in Philo and work in Champaign-Urbana, and people who are also live in Villa Grove or from Champaign and from Urbana, who just like to be in a small country church, and so they come be part of our community.
For people who may not be familiar with a Presbyterian church, what's distinctive about that?
Presbyterian church is a good old mainline church that is named after our form of government, which is that we each church is governed by elders, which in Greek is, as you know, is presbyters. So
and they're elected.
They're elected, and uh-huh. And they're not all old, to be to be honest.
To be fair, yeah.
But wise, we hope, and so it's our form of government that that causes our name. We're a mainline Protestant church. We're Reformed in our theology, and I think that maybe that's I'm ah Steve, you're Presbyterian. Help me out here.
Well, social concerns, I would say, would be like this, like fair trade would be something that many Presbyterian churches would feel comfortable with, would feel that's an important part of the gospel. Is that a, would you say
I think
that?
That's right. Oh. I think that's right. It grows out of our regard for Scripture and for trying to understand how God wants us to live in the world. So, yes, I think that's right.
We have another caller waiting on line number one from Champaign. Yes, you're on the air with Cindy Shepherd.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm a related. I have a relative who worked at Center for Development in Central America in Ciudad Sandino. Did you happen to Jubilee House? Did you happen to go there?
I could. You cut off a little bit. You said that was the Center for Development
in Central America, and okay. Related to Jubilee House, and they're in Ciudad Sandino, MGA, Nicaragua, and they do a whole bunch of. They have a coffee cooperative and a sesame cooperative and an organic coffee cooperative, and they also have a guest house. So that isn't where you stayed, I suppose.
No, we were in Managua, but it sounds very similar.
Uh-huh.
One of the wonderful things that grew out of a terrible thing is that the earthquake in 72 was the occasion for Protestant churches in Nicaragua to form coalitions and to figure out how to work together. And so it sounds like Ciudad Sandino is probably another city that I did not visit. But it sounds like a similar setup. They have a center there where they have programming and help for the people that live around in the neighborhood and in the area, as well as hosting people like us who come and want to know about life in Nicaragua and the connections that we can make that way. So it sounds very similar.
Yeah, and as far as fair trade coffee, I know that Strawberry Fields sells at least equal exchange chocolate and probably coffee.
Mm.
I don't believe they exclusively have fair trade brands, as I think the co-op now is pretty exclusively fair trade, and I know 10,000 Villages is, but Strawberry Fields has some.
And Strawberry Fields is on Main Street in Urbana.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Appreciate the call. I wonder how big of a disaster it would take in this country to get all the religious folks working together. We have another caller on line number 2 from rural Fisher. You're on the air with our guest, Cindy Shepherd.
Yes. I had to leave the program for a little bit, but early in your
shame,
program.
Shame, shame.
Pardon me?
No, I was just teasing. Go ahead.
I grew up on the farm way back in the 50s. And the description your guest gives of the families that grow the coffee is very similar to how life was here back in those days, where children work and everybody works together. And I really enjoyed that description. And to promote that throughout the world and throughout our country is a great thing, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
One of the places that we found co-ops in the United States where the agricultural co-ops are still very important, I think, in agriculture here. It did seem like kind of stepping back in time in many ways. The one morning I got up really early. You didn't sleep really well. I didn't sleep really well because there was a rooster right outside our window that crowed all night long. But I finally got up one morning and they were milking cows out in the barnyard. And I have a friend in Kansas who had a dairy, and so I've seen the way that's handled in this country. But out there, there was none of the machinery, none of the mechanics, none of the, antibacterial wiping all the time. They just have 15 cows and 2 guys, and they were just milking those cows.
Did they have a 3-legged stool?
One of the guys had a stool, and the other one just crouched. It was...
Into buckets?
They had buckets, and they let the calves in. And they'd let 2 calves in at a time, and the calf would find his or her mother, and so that that would start the milk let down, and the calf would nurse for a little while, and then they'd pull the calf off and tie it to the front leg of the cow, and then finish the bucket of milk. And then when they filled one bucket from that cow, then they untied the calf and emptied the bucket and went on to the next one.
Did the calves get enough?
The calves looked good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Must be have a system that works. Let me give the phone numbers again if you'd like to call. Talk to our guest, Cindy Shepherd, about fair trade, her trip to Nicaragua, 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes people who might be listening on the internet, on their computers, at will.illinois.edu. Cindy, you talked about the farmers getting some money at the beginning, even before they planted the seeds, and then some money in the middle of the growing season. So then they don't have to wait till the harvest and they sell it. It's guaranteed. But what if something happens to that crop? Have they still get their money, but...
I'm not... Crop failure there, I suppose, is a possibility, but they don't plant the seeds every year because the coffee grows, a plant lasts for 12 or 15 years.
Okay.
And I didn't hear anything about failure of a coffee crop there.
Okay. I suppose some natural disasters might affect coffee plants.
Earthquakes.
Strong storms. I don't know. Interesting.
It's a long-term relationship with I think that that would take that into account. If there was a bad year, I imagine the next year there'd be efforts to make it up somehow.
When you went to Nicaragua, was this your first trip to Central or South America?
It was. I hadn't even been out of the country for 30 years. I had to get a new passport. So.
Oh, okay. And your first impression when you landed in Nicaragua?
It was very beautiful and very different. The people there are just so gracious and hospitable. On my way home from Managua to Houston, I sat with a man who works for the German government as an economic development officer, and I asked him where he was going. Well, he's going back home to visit Germany. I said, "Do you think you'll live there again?" And he said, "No." He said, "You know, I've lived in Central and South America for 26 years, and I don't think I will ever live in Europe again because," he said, "I think it would be boring. These people are just so wonderful, and they welcome you and want to know about you, and they're so warm." He said, I couldn't go back and live any other place.
To give listeners a flavor of that warmness, let's play another cut from some music you brought back from Nicaragua. Oh. And this is a dance, and we should warn people this might be loud.
They had a big party for us, and halfway through the party, two children in costumes came and danced the name of the song is Nicaraguan Couples, and it was a quite elaborate little dance they did.
And lively, let's hear the music.
El cielo cayó un pelito encolochado. Aquí me tenés parado como garcita en laguna. ¿Cómo querés que me vaya sin esperanza ninguna? Serena, muy de madrugada canta, el que duerme en casa ajena, muy oscuro se levanta.
Well, that's quite lively, isn't it?
It was quite lively. They pulled people out of the audience and into the circle to dance with them a little bit, and then they moved on.
And what was the dancing like? It's by couples?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Circle?
No.
No?
No, by couples. And when they pulled people in to join them, they pulled them in to make another couple, like a snowball kind of.
I see, okay.
And then they let
them
go.
To encourage the wallflowers.
Yes.
Okay. When you look back on your trip, what was the emotional highlight for you?
The afternoon of the party, it was loud, and so I went and sat outside by the side of the road with a group of girls that were probably high school, middle school girls. And my Spanish is very rudimentary, but they were very sweet and kind to try and talk to me a little bit. And part of what was so wonderful about it was that they were just like high school and middle school girls here, and that the boys would be walking along the road or riding their bicycles or riding their horses along the road. And sometimes they would notice a boy, and you could tell it just made his day. And sometimes they would just very pointedly ignore the boy as he was walking by, no matter what he was trying to do to get their attention. So that felt very familiar. But I asked them then, do you think you'll live here always? And the girls looked at me and they said, "Oh, I hope so." Uh-huh. And I just thought how wonderful to have such a sense of home and such a sense of place and an appreciation for the beauty that surrounds you, that you would really hope to stay there forever.
And you said you felt very welcome.
Everyone was very wonderful to us. They fed us like kings and queens. It was this Nicaraguan meal we had over and over again, but it never really got old. It was always delicious. Rice and beans and chicken stew and fried plantains and They don't have refrigeration, so they have all this, the milk from the cows they make into cheese every day because they don't have any way to refrigerate it. And so we have that fresh, salty farmer cheese with our breakfast in the morning and our lunch at noon and our dinner at night.
And our last bit of Nicaraguan music is called Open House.
Quiero estar bien con mis hermanos, de norte a sur al fin del mundo. Saber oír y dar mis manos, sudar jugando algo bien sano. Todos aquí somos humanos, ¿qué más me da el color, la raza? Dentro tenemos sentimientos que necesitan de sustento. Si adentro hay buenos sentimientos.
Cindy Shepherd's been our guest on Keeping the Faith, talking about her trip to Nicaragua and learning about Fair Trade Coffee, sponsored by Equal Exchange, an interfaith partnership between Christians, Jews, and Muslims, making sure that the producers of coffee, chocolate, tea, and other things get good prices for the things they sell. Cindy, let me try to remember the various places locally in the Champaign-Urbana area people can buy these. Strawberry Fields was mentioned, the Common Ground Food Co-op, your church, the Philo Presbyterian Church, 10,000 Villages. Am I forgetting any that our various callers mentioned?
Common Ground, 10,000, Strawberry Fields.
Okay. Several places locally. And you were mentioning that even if people go to get a cup of coffee somewhere, they often have a choice of choosing fair trade coffee.
And if you're interested, you could ask your church to perhaps get involved and order the coffee through Equal Exchange.
EqualExchange.com. And thank you very much, Cindy Shepherd, for being our guest next week on Keeping the Faith.
Thank you.
Don Nolan will be our guest host, talking about the Avicenna Health Center, sponsored by the local Muslim community. I'm Steve Shoemaker. And thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.